I'm going to call to order a regular meeting for the City Council for the City of Grover Beach on Monday, November 1st, 2010. Would you all please stand with us, have a moment of silence for a recent loved one that has recently passed, and then remain standing as we do our flag salute this evening. Thank you. One of the most fun parts of our meeting is to include the youth in our meetings, and we typically bring them up to lead us in the flag salute. So tonight's meeting is going to be, or the flag salute is going to be led by Brady McMurphy. Brady is 11 years old and a sixth grade student at Fair Grove Elementary School. He likes social studies, the GATE program, and spending time with his friends at school. Brady enjoys living on the Central Coast because of the great weather and the beach. His interests include basketball, baseball, football, and hanging out with his friends. My kind of guy. Brady would like to study history in high school and college and wants to attend Notre Dame, Stanford, or university.
Wow.
Yeah. Great aspirations. He would like to play basketball in college and is leaving his options open when it comes to his profession. Brady is accompanied this evening by his teacher, Mr. Derek. Derek, I'm going to put your name.
That's okay.
Yeah.
Just forget the year.
And his family. So, Brady.
Ready, go.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Brady. And I have something for you. So come on. This is a certificate of appreciation for leading us in the flag salute. You want to turn and take a picture. And here are some more school supplies. So keep up the great work.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, how are they going?
Thank you,
Mr.
Mayor.
Thank you.
Come and see
you.
You
did a great job. Thank you.
Good job.
Thank you.
It's, what is that cap say? San Diego?
Yeah.
Okay. Very good. Donna, when you're ready, roll call.
Here.
Councilmember Myers.
Here.
Councilmember Peterson.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Nichols.
Here.
And Mayor Scholes.
Here. Thank you, Donna. City Attorney, you want to cover a closed session announcement?
Certainly. Thank you, Honorable Mayor, Council members. On Monday, October 18th, City Council met in one in closed session on one item, and that was negotiation with the Grover Beach Police Officer Association. After reconvening to open session, there were no reportable actions taken.
Thank you. How about agenda review? At this time, the council is going to review the order of business to be conducted and receive requests or make announcements regarding any changes to the order of the agenda. Do any members of the council want to change the order of the agenda as presented by staff this evening?
Not here.
If not, I'll accept a motion.
I'll move that we go with the agenda as presented.
I'll second that motion.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. If there's no additional discussion, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? None. Motion carries. Okay, let's move on to our ceremonial calendar tonight, and this is item number one on our agenda. And this is a drawing to select monthly winners of the Local Economic Stimulus Program Shop Local, Shop Loyal campaign. Ms. Chapman.
Honorable Mayor, City Council, and citizens of Grover Beach, tonight we are drawing 10 winners for the Shop and Dine in Grover Beach promotion. And for those of you who do not know, what you need to do is go to our local participating businesses, use a Shop and Dine in Grover Beach card, collect 10 stickers, bring them back to City Hall to be deposited into a drawing to where you could win $50 in Shop and Dine certificates, which can be used at the participating merchants. And Mr. Mayor, who would you like to have draw this evening?
Well, I noticed Mr. Lee sat in the middle, so we couldn't get to him tonight. Nice, nice strategic move. We'll draw
each,
two each.
Two each. Our first winner is James Wilson. Our second winner is by the last name of Green, and I will have to call them to see how to pronounce their first name. Our third winner is Reese.
Good job.
How'd I do that?
Should have been yours, huh?
Our fourth winner is Danielle Bainbridge.
Nice.
Our fifth winner is Steve Bergstrom. Our sixth winner is Chris Riley.
Absolutely.
Our seventh winner is Elizabeth Spears. Our eighth winner is Lois Hughes.
Oh, Lois Hughes.
Our ninth winner is Steve Bergstrom.
Oh, wow.
Steve's been shopping.
And our last winner this evening is Bruce Brown.
Good for Bruce.
Okay, very good. And Gayla, can you let everyone know how they can participate?
For businesses who are not participating, you can go on the city's website and go under Shop and Dine in Grover Beach, and there is an application that you can submit via the email. And for individuals who would like to participate, you can pick up a card at participating businesses, or you can come into City Hall and pick up cards in at the utility billing window or almost any other counter in City Hall.
Very good. Remember to shop local, shop loyal, everyone. Okay, let's move on to item number two under our ceremonial calendar. This is a proclamation of appreciation to YRAM volunteers for beautification efforts. And the Mayor Pro Tem is actually going to present this proclamation this evening. So, Mayor Pro Tem Nichols.
Tyler, would you come forward, please, and bring your...
Oh, that's how Steve was here.
No.
You got two buttons on it?
Two buttons gets him confused.
And we rehearsed this too.
Yeah. Imagine what happened. We don't rehearse it.
The city of Grover Beach, California, would like to express our appreciation to this group. Whereas the City Council would like to recognize individuals and groups who exemplify the policies established by the city relating to the beautification of property within the city. And whereas Youth with a Mission, generally known as YRAM, Pismo Beach and Central Coast, was started in September 2003 with a staff dedicated to living in community, reaching the Central Coast and beyond through evangelism and missions. And whereas the City Council of the City of Grover Beach would like to recognize and thank the members of YRAM for their assistance with completing the landscape project, which consisted of planting and beautifying the areas immediately in front of the exploration station on Ramona Avenue in Grover Beach. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the City Council of the City of Grover Beach hereby expresses its appreciation to the members of YRAM for their contribution to the beautification of Grover Beach. And I present this to you and to the entire group. And we thank you very much for your cooperation.
Thank you.
And I would like you to introduce the other members. And if you have anything to say, please do so.
My name is Tyler Dean. This is Jackie Gowing. This is Paulina Goodmanson, and this is Mike Klomp. And we are all full-time staff with YWAM Pismo Beach and Central Coast. And we work here in the local community, as we saw here. And then we also go overseas to many different nations around the world and help. Thank you for this honor.
Thank you.
And I'll just say that I met this group when we were working at Ramona, And their help was very timely because we put in some trees and some other beautifications the weekend, almost the weekend before the Stone Soup Music Fair, which is our largest music event in the city. So thank you all so much, and thank you for working hard and being great representatives of the youth. Thank you.
I knew I'd seen those guys before. Mm-hmm.
Okay, moving on to public communications. This is an opportunity for any member of the public to address the council on any item within the jurisdiction of this council. Please bear in mind that council cannot take any actions on items brought up in public communications, but we will listen to all items. Is there anyone here tonight that would like to address the council during public communications?
Good evening, Honorable Mayor and members of the City Council. My name is Jeff Lee with the Vice Chair of the Parks, Rec, and Beautification Commission. We'll start off with a far-reaching event. Since baseball is a park and rec activity, it is currently 0-0 in the top of the seventh.
No score. Thanks, Jeff.
There are runners on second and third, but we'll let that one go. So for the Giants, by the way.
Oh.
So back to local events. On Friday evening, we did have our carved pumpkin contest, and while I was unable to attend, I did hear we had 400 people attend that evening. We did have a large contingent of a plan B in case of the rain, but fortunately the rain did stay well to the north, and we were able to pull off another successful event. So one of our next events, speaking of the YRAM folks, is another beautification day coming up on Saturday, November 20th at 8 a.m., gathering outside City Hall for approximately 3 to 4 hours of community service of cleaning up and beautifying more aspects of Grover Beach. And then right around the corner will be December again, and that means that our annual holiday parade is coming up, and that's on Saturday, December 4th, starting at 10 a.m., going from 16th Street down to the Ramona Garden Park, where we will have some of events and so forth at the park after that, and we'll also have our tree lighting ceremony that day as well. So invite everybody out to the parade and stay with us to enjoy the rest of the festivities. As always, I'm available for questions.
Thank you, Jeff. Any questions?
Good job. Okay,
seeing none, thank you. Is there anyone else that would like to address the council doing public communication this evening? Okay, seeing none, I'm going to close public communication, bring it back to the council. And we're going to move into our public hearings this evening. This is item number 3 on the agenda, and this is consideration of a Planning Commission recommendation to amend Zoning Ordinance Part 49, Affordable Housing Density Bonuses and Development Concessions or / Incentives. Mr. Buckingham.
Good evening, Honorable Mayor, members of the City Council. Testing. Hello?
Hello.
You're on.
Mayor.
Go ahead.
You can hear. Okay. Good evening, Honorable Mayor, members of the Council. To give you a little bit of background on this item, in 2007, the council first adopted an ordinance which added Part 49, Affordable Housing Density Incentives and Concessions. The purpose of the ordinance was to do two things, basically to implement the state-adopted housing incentives, which apply to 5 units or more, and also to adopt incentives, concessions for projects that fall below that realm or threshold at 4 or fewer units. At the September council meeting, the council directed staff to initiate an amendment to Part 49. The intent of the amendment is to consider additional incentives for projects that are exclusively affordable or 100% of the units being affordable. Just by way of giving you some background as well as the public, we talk about these income categories: extremely low, very low, low, moderate. They're based on median income of a family in the city of San Luis Obispo County. We use the county standards. And just as an example, well, first of all, very low is at 50% of the county median income. I said that's very low, is below 50%. Low is between 50 and 80%. Moderate is 80 to 120%. So those are the income categories. Just as an example, a family of 4 in the low income category, their income would be $58,000 a year. So just to put it in perspective, what we talk about in these income categories. Further background, the city actually, the state actually calculates what's known as the city's regional housing needs allocation, or RENA numbers. And in our housing element, it includes about 65 low and very low unit units, I should say, that are required by the city to plan for over the next 4 years. It doesn't mean we have to build the units. It just means we need to have the land available for those units to be constructed. The city's housing element establishes many goals and policies providing affordable housing. Policy 1.1 in particular states that the city will explore effective developer incentives for affordable housing, especially if the developments include 100% of the housing as affordable. Currently, again, Part 49 applies only when a minimum of one unit is proposed to be income restricted. However, there are no additional incentives currently if you have more than one unit of affordability. Since the adoption of Part 49, there's been two projects that have implemented the incentives. The most notable was the Habitat for Humanity project down at South 5th and Long Branch. You've heard some discussion about it before, but basically they were able to get an approved project with three incentives to make the project financially feasible. However, even with the incentives, there were some impediments. There was a lot of changes in the design. Ultimately, they were able to resolve those issues and get the project approved, but it did illustrate that the current ordinance may not provide adequate design flexibility for projects that are providing all affordable units. Typically, when we see these all affordable housing projects in this community or others, they're usually led by nonprofit companies, development companies that have a mission of providing affordable housing. And typically, we see those proposed at the low or very low levels. The other scenario where we do see for-profit developers building affordable housing is usually when there is a city or agency that's involved in some kind of subsidy, whether that be reduced land cost or providing discounted fees. On October 12th, we took this item to the Planning Commission. They did adopt a resolution recommending the council approve an amendment. It specifically allows for an additional incentive rather than three. It provides for now a fourth incentive for projects that are 100% affordable. It also added a concession, an additional concession to reduce or eliminate guest parking requirements, and there were some minor revisions to clarify existing language. It should be noted at the Planning Commission meeting there was discussion regarding whether additional incentives should be added to encourage development of units at a more affordable income level. So if they came in at low, should we be providing incentives to subsidize or bring them to very low? Basically, the staff response to that was, since the level of affordability is dependent upon, again, these nonprofits or the city's subsidies, usually they come in with low units because that's what they have, the money or the funding, whether it be federal or state grants or city incentives. So we didn't see it as much as a market-driven issue as it is just how many incentives that the developer has. So in conclusion, the Planning Commission did not support that amendment and approve the ordinance as you see it tonight. Just to let you know, during the process, staff has solicited input from several housing, affordable housing developers and architects involved in these types of projects to, in an attempt to better understand the challenges that they face when designing these projects. Since the Planning Commission meeting of a few weeks ago, I've continued to have additional input from the affordable housing community, and as a result of that, they have pointed out that an additional issue is that arises very commonly is how we require off-street parking, meaning how the parking is provided on-site. And right now, the zoning code requires parking be provided with an attached two-car garage. So you're building affordable housing, you have to provide an attached two-car garage. So as a result of that, staff has come up with some language that we'd like the council to consider as potentially additional incentive tonight. And the top part, four, and explains that this is exclusively for low, very low, or extremely low projects. You still get any of the incentives listed above under 1, 2, and 3, and then the additional guest parking requirements may be reduced or eliminated. So the council may want to consider the following addition, which is simply required off-street parking for each unit may be provided in a detached garage, covered, or open parking space. So, again, these are it's important to clarify that all of these incentives in Part 49 are may. They're not necessarily a given. They may apply for these. What this additional incentive does is simply you're trying to meet your on-site parking requirements, two parking spaces. This isn't reducing that standard. It's just simply stating that rather being in an attached garage, it could be detached, it could be a combination of covered, meeting carport, or it could be surface or open parking spaces. So, in conclusion, the proposed ordinance would provide additional incentives, again, for low, very low, or extremely low income levels. It would also implement the adopted housing element policy 1.1. And staff did want to note that even with these proposed incentives, it should be noted that every ordinance that the council adopts establishes a boundary that or parameters that some projects are going to fit within it and some are not going to fit within it. And this is our attempt in providing some additional concessions or incentives that will help provide additional affordable housing within the community. So with that, staff is recommending approval of the amendment to Part 49 as recommended by the Planning Commission with consideration of the additional incentive provided by staff. That concludes staff's report.
Thank you, Mr. Buckingham. Any questions of staff? Councilmember Myers.
I assume if the council decided to adopt the proposed amendment you just read with paragraph C on your board, that would require that this hearing be continued for purpose of public notice to another hearing?
No, I believe that the
city attorney.
Thank you, Mayor, council members. I think the described addition falls within the noticing that was provided. If the council wishes to move forward with that change to the language, conduct a public hearing, first reading by title only, and then schedule it for a second reading and the next regularly scheduled meeting, which I believe would be on the 16th.
Thank you, Martin.
Did you have anything you wanted to add to that?
No.
Okay. Was that your only question?
I have only a question, yes.
Okay.
I have a couple of
Councilmember
questions.
Councilmember Peterson.
A couple of things I need clarified. You'd mentioned that there was one aspect of it that the Planning Commission had not recommended. Could you go over that again? I was a little confused about that.
These incentives are proposed for when we have exclusively affordable housing projects for the low, very low, or extremely low. We didn't make a differentiation that the low only gets these incentives and the extremely low should get more incentives. So the discussion was, do you build something in to the ordinance which would incentivize, give more incentives for somebody that was going to provide very low instead of low? And again, the discussion, some of the discussion that revolved around that was that, as I had mentioned previously, that typically your affordable housing developer, they're acquiring either federal or state grant money, other sources of money. What level of affordability you ultimately get just has to do with how much funding that the project developer is able to get. As an example, a three-bedroom unit at the low level is $164,000 sales price. At the very low level, don't quote me, I think it's $110,000. So there's $54,000 difference between the sale value of those units. So you build the unit. The only thing that's going to make it very low as opposed to low is coming up with $54,000 to buy down that price. So
So you don't, the commission didn't feel that a greater number of incentives would pull down the price sufficiently to make a difference?
Correct. And again, I think part of that was the recognition that the developer and what kind of monies they bring to the table will have to do with how they can establish the affordability level.
Okay.
And that even if we said you know, we'll waive parking requirements, that doesn't help them get more money to build the project.
My next question has to do with the use of the term may. And I wondered if I didn't understand that the use of the term may in there meant that we may or may not allow those things.
That is correct. I mean, ultimately, the project can propose those incentives. They can give their rationale as to why they would they believe those should be approved. But ultimately, depending on the approving body, whether they be the Planning Commission or the City Council, they ultimately make that determination.
Is that typical planning verbiage?
Yes, in the sense that to give the council or the Planning Commission some discretion, we don't normally say in ordinance that you shall be able to do that there is discretion for the commission or council to ultimately decide whether they should approve that or not.
Mayor and council members, one thing to perhaps keep in mind on this particular ordinance or part 49 of our code is that this is something that the council moved forward with adopting over and beyond state requirements. There are state requirements that govern development of projects that are 5 units or more. In order to provide incentives, as the community development director outlined, for projects that are smaller, more common in our city, this ordinance was put into place, and discretion was important, at least at the time of adoption, because some of these incentives or concession, if grouped all together, may create a project that may not be something that the Planning Commission or the Council would approve in a provided neighborhood or under certain circumstances.
And my concern isn't the issue of discretion. My concern is the understanding of the word may, because to me, may means can. And so but if this is standard usage, then I guess people who are reading this understand it. I wouldn't interpret it that way necessarily. It would confuse me. If it says may, I would think it would mean I can. You may do that. Instead of you maybe may do that. Anyway, if this is standard parlance, then maybe the others who read it know what they're talking about. That's my only question.
And the word may goes to a request, not to actually doing it. You may request it.
You may request it.
It doesn't mean that you're going to get it.
That's your answer.
Okay. I'm showing good discipline without jumping in here on this. Mayor Pro Tem, you have any questions?
No.
Councilmember Wright?
I do. So then you're saying this C, with that C, then take the place of...
No, it would just follow. That's the
so it's
basically
just
number
A,
four.
B, and C.
Yes, correct.
And then we would still go on with... The parking may reduce by the city's air quality provisions.
Correct.
From the city required parking standards.
No changes of the other sections.
Okay. So then my concern is that these projects, whether they're low, very low, or whatever, that they be a viable and equitable development for the residents, as well as a long-term asset to the city. So we're talking about possibly no garage. I mean, whereas the other developments in our town are required to have a garage. So can you talk to me about that a little bit?
Well, first of all, because most of these any for sale project, affordable housing projects for sale, does come under Part 40, and Part 40 is what indicates you have to have a two-car garage. The reality is if you were to build an apartment project, the standards are reduced for apartment projects in the community, one covered and one uncovered, if I recall correctly. So while this would reduce the standard for for-sale product, it's not completely inconsistent with other types of projects can be approved in the city.
But we're not talking about an apartment here. We're talking about a development,
correct.
A private urban development, right?
Correct. My point being is that this would give relief if you had a for-sale affordable project. If you come in and you want to, in a rental affordable project, you don't fall under Part 40, the two-car attached requirement. You'd come under the regular zoning code requirements, which would be just, I believe it's one covered and one uncovered.
For a private urban development? No. For a private development?
Correct. Affordable or not.
If you're coming in and saying you're going to build these to rent them as opposed mm-hmm. to build them to sell them.
Correct.
Whether it's a house or an apartment, you're saying that?
Only if it's an apartment, a multifamily okay. project of some okay. type, yeah.
Very good. I just want to clarify that. Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
Okay. Bruce, let me ask you, because I don't see it clearly say it in here, who would, as written, who would make the final decision on
the approving body. So for projects that are four or less, it would go to the Planning Commission. Maps would come to the City Council.
Okay. I'll have some conversation on that later, some discussion on that later. I'm going to hold the rest of my questions until later as well. So this is a public hearing item. Let me open this up to the public. Is there anyone that would like to address this item before the council this evening? Please come forward and state your name and city of residence for the record.
Good evening, Honorable Mayor Scholes and City Council. My name's Lenny Grant, and I've coming here tonight to provide support for the proposed staff proposal for affordable housing on parking. I'm fortunate to call Habitat for Humanity, San Luis Housing Authority, People Self-Help Housing, and Cal Poly Faculty Staff Housing as past clients and current clients. And so this is a normal part of my practice to design affordable housing, and I could definitely say that parking is the number one hurdle to producing affordable housing and long-term maintenance for these types of projects. So I definitely support staff's language and would encourage you to support it as well. It's critical in my mind, especially to allow for more affordable construction, more affordable units, and more affordable in terms of maintenance. I think it'll result in that, and as long as they're not overly impacting, you know, the environment. So. And you have that discretion. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Grant. Mr. Ryu.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor Scholes and members of the council. I'm Jerry Ryu, the executive director of the San Luis Obispo County Housing Trust Fund and a resident of Napomo. I really commend you for taking this up. I was elated when you passed a local density bonus ordinance a few years ago, and I'm glad that you're looking at it again to update it. I've talked with Bruce a couple of times on this, and actually I didn't think of what I'm going to say today until earlier today. I'd like to suggest that you include as an option that the city may provide the same benefits that are allowed under the state density bonus law. And that's, again, is may if you want. Because the state density bonus law is a lot more flexible than your law. And if the project makes sense, providing those benefits, the more flexible benefits, would be advantageous. The other thing that may come into play is that a developer may have a choice between building five units and complying with the state law and getting all the state benefits, or building a four-unit project. But if they wouldn't get the state benefits, they might not be able to build it as a four-unit. So they may choose to build four units if you offer them the same benefits. The major difference between your local benefits and the state benefits, the first is parking. The state prescribes the parking standards. Rather than may, in terms of all the other incentives, you must allow no more than the state prescribed parking, which is for smaller units, less parking. Larger units, it's actually, well, medium-sized units, it's more parking than you require. It also allows uncovered parking, tandem parking, and more flexibility with parking. The other difference is that the state allows any standard to be waived. Open space, square footages, balconies, lot coverage, etc. And when you look at a project, and especially when you have odd-sized lots and the small lots that you have in your community, having more flexibility will probably result in a better project. So I commend you for considering this, the staff for recommending it, but I'd like you to consider allowing the incentive that is the incentives that are provided under the state law is an option. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Biu. Is there anyone else who would like to address the council?
Good evening, Honorable Mayor, Council. My name is Tom Martin, and I live in San Luis Obispo, and I'm chair of the Site Acquisition Committee for Habitat for Humanity, and was working on the Fifth and Long Branch project when it was first being developed when I joined the organization and the committee. And I just wanted to show my appreciation to the city for being flexible, for showing good progressive planning here, keeping up with other cities that are providing very similar kind of incentives. And I think our project down on Fifth and Long Branch came out really well. Mm-hmm. It looks good from the street. And it's kind of our flagship project right now that we put on all our brochures and everything. So very much appreciate the consideration and that we got to give input to staff for this.
Great. Thank you, Tom. Is there anyone else? Seeing no one coming forward, I'm going to close this to the public and bring it back to the council. Let me ask Mr. Buckingham, how does the proposed ordinance, and I think Jerry Rio brings up a really good point, how does the proposed ordinance compare to state law?
As Jerry mentioned, I mean, certainly there are built-in parking incentives to the state's ordinance. I, of all things, I don't have it in front of me, but, I mean, it would probably be something that we would want to put into a column format and bring back to you and show you all the differences maybe between what we have now and what would be allowed under the state ordinance.
Okay, because yeah, the next question is naturally why would we not go down that road if it's something that would be simplified and something that's a little more flexible. Okay, if there are no other, let's have some discussion. If there are no other questions, so let me start to my right, Councilmember Bright. Any discussion?
Well, other than my concern about the project, I just I don't want it to be a substandard project because it's low or low income or whatever, for those two reasons, because of the residents who are going to live there, call it their home, as well as the residents that are going to live around it, that project. So it needs to be a so that's my concern when we're talking mm-hmm. about mm-hmm. The parking part. The other 4A and B, I'm good with that. I'm just concerned about eliminating a garage and in a housing development. So,
good comments. Mayor Pro Tem Nichols, you have anything?
No, I agree with Councilwoman Bright. I would be interested in seeing the flexibility that state has. I that sounds good. I'd like to see that.
Okay, Councilmember Peterson.
Ditto and ditto with my fellow council members, and thank you to the members of the public who came out and gave us their input. That's really helpful.
Councilmember Myers?
Well, those who have been here know that I've always had issue with the parking regulations we have in this city. They've been way too severe, and I certainly agree with a name that's already been mentioned, Jerry Bunin, who's been telling us for years that, and I also agree with him that if you don't make projects something that people can afford to build, many developers, they aren't going to get built. So I'd rather have a project that somebody can live in rather than have one that nobody can live in because it's not there. So I'll part company with Karen on that a little bit. So I'm in favor of getting affordable housing built to pretty much regardless of what you have to do with these issues about what you require. And certainly I don't think it's too much of a burden to ask the residents that can afford a house that have the money to afford other than a low-income house to share the parking burden a little bit on the street and let these people have a house to live in and let it shake out in any other way it possibly can. I also agree with my followers here that we ought to look at the state standards on five or more, because I understand myself independently they are much more lenient than what we have, and maybe we ought to get consistency across the board with the state and with the county and with the city if we possibly can, so everybody knows what the law is and not be guessing. Someone once said, when the laws of the country get so big that nobody can understand it, we ought to rewrite all the laws. Well, we've been that way a long time, so to the extent that we can make the laws more consistent and more understandable, we ought to go with it if it doesn't hurt somebody. I think I've said enough for now. Thanks.
Very good. City Attorney, are there any legal obstacles to saying we want to kind of pair it or extend state law, which applies to projects with five or more units, to those that actually have four or less?
Mayor, council members, there are a few things to consider. First of all, if it is the wish of the council to have that before you in that format, we would have to renotice and go through the process to notice a public hearing. Couple of things that I think I would like to hear as far as direction is it the wish of the council to simply adopt the state law provisions to be applicable to any project, no matter what the size is within the city, or is it the wish of the council to look at the incentives that are being provided by the state law and list those as those that are available and still retain the discretion to provide those incentives ultimately or not to those developers who are asking. The state law is a mandate that there is no discretion. There are some discretionary areas, but generally speaking, and it's based on numbers. I don't have it in front of me. It's been a while since I've looked at the code sections, but it deals with number of incentives that are available, number of concessions that are available. And there's a difference between density incentives in the state law, which provide you with basically provide the developer the ability to build much denser development than the general plan provides for, versus concessions on development standards, which allows them to overlook certain requirements of the particular jurisdiction's development standards. So those are some of the things that the council would need to balance and give some thought to. If it is an area that you want to explore, it would really be my recommendation that we return before bringing you an ordinance for a first reading and adoption that we recommend with that we return to you with a, basically a treatment of what is there to look at and how that would apply in our jurisdiction. And once you have an opportunity to absorb that, then we would, following your direction, bring an ordinance that reflects your wishes. I don't know. I don't want to speak for the community development director, but I think doing this in a one-step process could probably result in changes that would be over and beyond a noticed hearing.
Well, yeah, and let me just clarify, because I would think that the council majority, it is not our intention to extend state mandates to smaller projects. I think when we first started talking about this, as you pointed out correctly, we have a lot of projects that typically fall under that five unit threshold, and which sort of becomes a challenge, because we've had projects come forward in the past where there was four units, and in order to get the state provisions or at least somewhat qualify or be able to apply for, folks were coming forward and trying to creatively find a way to get a fifth unit when the lot would not allow for that type of density and scale and massing. And so I think the concept is good that we're trying to find a way for affordable projects that fall under that threshold, but it's certainly, I don't think, our intent to extend state mandates to smaller projects. And so I think with that said, more information that would be helpful for us is if staff could come back with the ordinance that apparently the Planning Commission is recommending, and staff has obviously added one additional item for our consideration, and compare that to the state. And if we were to take that and say, yeah, there are some provisions here we like, but we want to maintain it as discretion, I think that's really the direction I believe we're trying to go. Does anyone disagree with that?
No, I agree with you. I think that is the direction we'd like to go. And I appreciate Council's comments.
I was certainly talking about adopting the discretionary standards and not mandatory standards that mm-hmm. might be imposed. That was what I was pointing toward. I like what our City Council has said about having a separate schooling, if you will, on what's in the state standards before we bring this back for reconsideration as an item on the agenda. That's would be my input on that as well.
Okay, and I think staff's right, taking copious notes. And just one item that you brought up, Councilmember Peterson, based on my former life in the planning world, the vernacular typically is your may and shoulds are more of a suggestion or a principle. If it says shall, it is a mandate. But the problem is a lot of times shoulds and mays become shalls.
Thank you.
What would your suggestion be, City Attorney?
Thank you, Honorable Mayor, Council Members. My suggestion is you simply don't take any action on this item. And we have direction from you. We'll return with a regular business item to discuss this issue further. And then, consistent with your direction, we'll re-notice the proposed ordinance consistent with whatever direction we receive from the council.
Okay. Any potential time frame on this? I know that we've had a few speakers here, and I'm sure there are others that are interested in our progress on this item.
Not at the next council meeting.
Well, no. that's our Christmas gift to you.
Thank you. No. probably the first meeting in January.
Okay. I think that's plenty of time. I don't think there's a big project out there, so we want to make sure we take our time and get it right.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
Yeah, opportunity to do it right.
So I guess we will take no action on item 3 this evening. And when staff is prepared to come back to the council, there will be an additional notice so that the public and the community understands that we're taking that item up. Okay? That's good? Okay, let's move on to item number 4. This is adoption of the 2010 California Building Codes. Mr. Buckingham, I think you're giving this presentation as well.
Good evening, Honorable Mayor, members of the council. The state mandates every 3 years that the building and construction codes are updated for all cities and counties throughout the state of California. The state has adopted the 2010 California Building Standards Code on July 1st of this year, and that becomes effective January 1st, 2011. The city codifies those California building codes by amending our municipal code, Article 8 Building Regulations. The 2010 California Building Standards Code is based on model codes from various organizations. The 2010 Building Standards Code include an administrative code, a building code, a residential code, electrical, mechanical, plumbing code, energy code, historical building code, existing building code, and a California Green Standards Building Code. So collectively, those make up our 2010 building codes. Of those, there are two new codes. In addition to those codes that are mandatory, the city is, or staff is proposing that we adopt the property maintenance code, and that is a currently adopted code. We have the 2006 version. This would also then bring that up to date to the 2009 code. I just wanted to point out that we did have JAS Pacific, which is, you know, is our contract planning or building company that does assist with these types of updates and does our building plan check and inspection services. And Jack Leonard's here tonight to answer any technical questions regarding the code. So in conclusion, we're Staff is recommending the municipal code be amended, specifically Article 8, Building Regulations, Chapter 1, by repealing the existing 2007 codes and replacing them with the 2010 codes. And I might add, I believe in previous years, looking back, that one of the reasons this was a larger issue, if you will, or more discussion, was because in the past we have adopted amendments to those codes, which local jurisdictions can do based on geography and climate. But this year, in this case, we're not proposing any amendments. Staff believes that the new codes as written are suitable for our location. And so, in reality, this is a somewhat of a formality because this code is going to go into effect January 1st. And okay. Tonight, we're just asking you to adopt the code so we can incorporate them into our municipal code. That concludes my report.
Thank you, Bruce. Any questions of staff? Mayor Pro Tem Nichols?
Would you elaborate just a little bit on the property maintenance code? How does that help the code enforcement? If you have state code, they can enforce it. We adopt it. How does that help them? I don't need a long explanation.
You know, for that, though, I'm going to ask Jack Leonard to address that.
Appreciate it.
Well, we got him here. We might as well.
Exactly. He came all this way.
Good evening. Honorable Mayor and Council, I'm Jack Leonard, Vice President of JAS, from the Los Angeles area, although I'd rather be from the Central Coast, maybe when I retire. The property maintenance code helps code enforcement. It addresses weeds, dilapidated structures, those types of issues that code enforcement generally are involved with. So that's separate from the actual building codes.
And that we must adopt. It is somewhat of an optional code that the council.
Okay, I understand that. Okay. I was just trying to figure out if there's some
ease of enforcement. Mayor Pro Tem, it's ease of enforcement. If it is adopted into our municipal code, it is easier for the city to simply move forward with enforcement of it. Because then the enforcement mechanism that's set forth in our code and other administrative enforcement is applicable.
Oh, okay. That's what I was looking for. Good. Thank you very much.
Good question.
That was a good question. Any others? You don't have
no,
any
no,
questions?
No, I'm familiar with the process on standard codes.
Okay. And just to further clarification on that, then, this property maintenance code would not address the issue of inoperable vehicles in front yards or anything of that nature. Is that correct?
Good.
It would depend on the condition that they're in, but it does provide for rules governing how nuisances are abated on property. Okay. And if that vehicle is leaking fluids or in some other form is a nuisance, I think that code would provide you with some mechanisms to enforce it.
Okay, and then we could clearly expand that if we wanted to get into not only that, but furniture and other things that affect the appearance of neighborhoods and homes.
Correct, and I believe that, and there is language in the property maintenance code about unsightliness, so it does provide us, again, that flexibility.
Okay, very good. Seeing no additional questions from the council, I'm going to open this up to the public, and is there anyone that would like to address the council on this item? Seeing? I saw someone move over there. It's almost like an auction. You got to be careful over here. So I'm going to close this to the public, bring it back to the council. Is someone prepared to make a motion on this item?
I'll move for staff's recommendation.
I'll second that motion.
Okay, there's a motion and a second, and this is just to open and conduct the hearing, correct? So I can do this.
Conduct a first reading by title and schedule a second reading for next council meeting, right?
Right.
Regular scheduled council meeting.
Okay. I see it says roll call down here. So roll call.
Yes.
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 Yes. Motion carries. Okay, moving on to our consent agenda this evening. This is an agenda where we take items, typically they're routine items, and we take them in one motion.
May I make a comment? Second that.
There's a motion and a second comment.
I just want to thank our staff and the Grover Beach Police Officers Association for collaboratively working together to allow our city to go forward. Thank you very much.
It was the help we got from the chief.
Okay, very good. Roll call.
bad comment.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, please. Yes, I'm laughing so much I'm not talking.
Yes.
Yes. Motion carries. Okay, moving on to our regular business, and this is item number 8, if you're following along. This is authorization to participate in the San Luis Obispo County Energy Watch Program. And I will be recusing myself from this item, as PG&E is my employer, and I know they are a major player in this program. So I'm going to go catch the end of the baseball game, so talk slowly.
Yeah, but John, they're doing all the good things here. You shouldn't have to go. I don't think we are allowed to recuse himself.
Mad.
We'll declare a non-conflict of interest, how about?
Yeah.
Two outs.
We want a full report.
City Manager, would you care to proceed?
Yes, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. Tonight's item that you have before you is the authorization to participate in the San Luis Obispo County Energy Watch Program, along with the county and PG&E and a number of other municipalities that are already participating in the program. The advantage to participating in the program is that it will provide the city assistance to the city businesses and residents within Grover Beach. The focus of the program is actually to increase energy efficiency and limit and conserve energy usage. Should point out that the city has already taken significant steps to reduce its use of energy. These have been done through the program that we've had underway with Pacific West Energy Solutions, whereby we're retrofitting a lot of our mechanical equipment, HVAC equipment. More importantly, perhaps, is small and medium-sized businesses in our community would also be able to benefit from the program. PG&E has energy specialists available that would be visiting various businesses, going through their energy review and making recommendations as to equipment changes, et cetera. And these would then would possibly be funded through programs that PG&E already have, according to the business's eligibility. It's one more item that we would be able to provide information about as part of an economic development resource, if you will. Residents will also be able to benefit in a similar fashion. The program will make available seminars and information to residents regarding energy-saving options. The advantage to this program to the city is that it doesn't require any financial contribution. It is simply city staff is designated, or I will designate a city staff member to sit on a committee along with other partner members in terms of monitoring the program, et cetera. Obviously, the alternatives available to the council are to authorize the city to participate in the program, indicate that you do not want to participate in the program, or provide the city with additional direction. The staff's recommendation is that you would adopt the attached resolution authorizing the participation today. We have members of PG&E staff. I can see Patricia Wilmore is out there in the audience, and she may have a few comments for you as well. That concludes staff's report, and I'm available to answer any questions you might have.
Do we have any questions from council?
No.
No, it's pretty clear.
No, I may for Ms. Whitmore, if she's going to speak. But
I will open it to the public, and I do have a request from Ms. Wilmore to speak.
Thank you very much, Mayor Pro Tem Nichols and members of the council. May I be the first to tell you the Giants have won the World Series.
Wow.
So,
wow.
With that, the Energy Watch partnership does provide a lot of benefits for the city, which your city manager has very well outlined. And I am essentially here to simply is for the community to learn more about how they can be more energy efficient. We are one of those rare businesses which really wants you to use less of what we sell, and we're very sincere in that commitment and do look forward to this partnership. It is truly a partnership. We working alongside you to bring the benefits to your municipality and your community. As was mentioned by your city manager, there are also great benefits derived by the small businesses in your community, which can get free energy audits and free product to save money in the future. So welcome, and it's good to see you this evening.
Thank you. Do you have any questions?
I do.
Patricia?
If you wouldn't mind.
Too quick.
Regarding the qualifying PG&E business customers, how do they qualify? And then it says we'll be eligible for the installation of several energy-efficient measures free of charge. Can you explain some of those?
Yes. We contract with Staples Marketing, and they will go into what is a small business. Our large business customers actually have assigned energy solutions and service representatives working with them all along the way. This is more for the smaller businesses, and Staples will come in and do an audit. And they may see things like vending machines, exit signs, lighting that is not as energy efficient as that which is currently available. And then they would recommend that product be installed in that business free of charge.
Oh, okay. So then when we say, so qualifying business, that just means the size of the business?
Primarily, yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I also would like to mention that Christine Rogers is with me this evening. And she is the program coordinator. The Economic Vitality Corporation is managing the partnership for us along with the county. And Christina is the point person on all of these issues and conducts the monthly partnership meetings at which one of your staff will participate and be able to bring back more information to the council as we go along.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Do we have any other questions? I have only one question. How many of the other communities in San Luis Obispo County have joined this partnership?
You represent 100%. Once you join, we'll have all the cities in the county.
Thank you, Patricia. Do we have anybody else in the public that would like to speak to this issue?
Yeah.
Let me comment that with the motion that we have just passed, San Luis Obispo is now 100% partnership with PG&E in this program.
Well, outstanding. And for those of you who are going to watch the game later and don't want to hear this, put your hands over your ears.
Patricia already beat you to it.
Patricia told us.
3-1.
She didn't give us the score.
3-1. We already knew what the one going in was.
I tell you, some people just never change.
Gotta get up early
okay.
And get that, ladies.
So then let's move on to item number 9. This is our a request to initiate a code amendment to comply with state mandated requirement to allow emergency sea shelters. Community Development Director Buckingham. Boy, it's your show tonight.
Mayor, members of the council, in October 2007, the state adopted Senate Bill 2, or SB 2, which clarified and strengthened requirements of housing element law. In particular, the legislation requires housing elements to be adopted with specific language mandating that cities comply with SB 2, allowing emergency homeless shelters by right. Accordingly, in November of 2009, the council adopted the 2007 through 2014 city housing element, which includes a program to comply with the state-mandated SB 2. Now, the time frame to amend the zoning ordinance is within 1 year of the housing element adoption, again from November of 2009. A little background, SB2 facilitates efforts to address the critical needs of homeless populations and persons with special needs throughout the state of California. The state code defines emergency shelter as housing with minimal support services for homeless persons that is limited to occupancy of 6 months or less by a homeless person. SB2 mandates that all cities provide a minimum of one zoning district or an overlay on a particular site or sites which allow emergency shelters by right. And when we say by right, no discretionary approvals, no use permits are required. However, the law does agree, residential zone, the LM or light manufacturing zone, and the CI coastal industrial district. And I just wanted to walk you through those zones tonight and provide you with a couple of comments for your discussion. The R3 is a multifamily residential zone. It's scattered throughout the city. You have some areas here in the north section of town. You have R3 parallel with Grand Avenue to the north. You have R3 also parallel with Grand to the south. Another large R3 project over by Oak Park, along the 13th Street corridor, Farrell Road corridor, as well as in the lower portion of the city there. Things to consider in looking at the R3 zone is that you do have a lot of areas that are intermixed with other zoning districts within the community. You have a lot of R3 that's near adjacent to Grand Avenue. And typically in the R3, we're going to see smaller lots or the typical lot size of 50 by 150 in the city. The second zone identified was the light manufacturing. That's the darker gray section here, south of Farrell Road. And then the last one was the coastal industrial section, which runs along South 4th Street here, as well as south of Grand and west of 4th Street. So the housing element just said you would consider looking at those zones. It doesn't hold you to that. The council could consider other zones. And again, state law doesn't require that you say everything in the coastal industrial zone could be considered. You could create an overlay of coastal industrial, say, along South 4th Street. So you could even go as far as just indicating that there'd be one site that would have an overlay that would allow the emergency shelters by right. So again, that's our primary discussion point tonight. Because this is by right, one option that the city can provide in providing some kind of performance standards, some kind of standards to help oversee the operations. We have reviewed a couple of other ordinances in the county that have been adopted. We went ahead and we've outlined some performance standards that we thought the council might want to consider incorporating into this zoning ordinance amendment, the neighbors on if issues arise, how they would be mitigated. So again, one potential thing for the council to consider. The remaining ones are, I would say, more standard types of performance standards, require on-site management and on-site security, provide adequate external lighting for security purposes, require parking and outdoor facilities be designed to provide security for residents in the surrounding area, and require the shelter be available to residents for the maximum time length, and that services be provided to assist residents in obtaining permanent shelter and income. So those are some performance standards if the council also wanted to provide us some input on, we would appreciate. So again, in conclusion, we're asking staff to authorize this, but more importantly, we're asking for some input so that we can actually expedite then getting this through the process and trying our best to conform with the time limits and the housing element. That concludes the report. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Nice staff report. Thank you. Any questions of staff? Mayor Pro Tem Nichols.
Yes, I do, too. I have a question.
The mandate from the state states that we will have a zone that allows, without question, putting in this type of facility.
Or even a sub-area of that zone, an overlay partial area of that zone.
Okay. If we designate a zone, let's say, that doesn't prohibit that type of facility going into another area. It's just that if somebody wanted to put one in another area, they would have to come before the Planning Commission, go through the rigmarole of getting the use permit and so forth. So it can still be done. We're not eliminating and putting it anyplace else.
Well, good question. Right now, our use table doesn't address this type of use. And so if you were to come to the counter and ask, where can we put these? Right now, we wouldn't know where. You know, we'd probably say it's uncertain. So right now, we were just asking the council to give us feedback on the zone or area of the zone that it would be permitted by right. The council could certainly give us additional direction and say it could be conditionally permitted in these other zones. That would be the council's discretion.
Isn't it conditionally permitted now?
It would depend, Mayor and council members. I think for items that are not specifically listed on the permitted uses or land uses on the zoning table, I think staff has in the past looked to see if the use is similar.
Excuse me, I spoke too soon. We do have a homeless shelter category in our use table, Councilman Member Nichols. So we already have direction as to where they are required with the use permit in the neighborhood commercial, the office professional, the commercial service, the east end of Grand Avenue. So there are three zones identified in the commercial districts.
Is the use defined?
Well, homeless shelters.
Okay, well, I don't want to get bogged down on it. All I'm saying is that if we do select a zone, that doesn't eliminate putting it someplace else.
Correct.
By virtue of that. Okay.
Correct.
All right, that's all I
have. Well, maybe that should be part of the discussion. If we're talking about opening up one or two other zones, then do we want to reconsider what the code is already allowing? Because that sounds like those are conditionally allowed, and this is allowed by right.
Correct.
So, okay. Any questions?
That actually, he answered my question. Thank you.
Very good.
I have a question.
Councilmember Myers.
Mr. Buckingham, addressing Senate Bill 2, does it mandate that the city allow create a zoning that allows a certain number of homeless shelters, or is it wide open to how many apply?
You are required to have land available for at least one homeless shelter within that area.
No, it's at least one. So.
And there are a couple of other communities that have adopted them. They have put the typical you can't have another one within 1,000 feet type of standard.
Thank you. I assume there must be some limitation on it.
Okay.
I had a question.
Do you have a question? Councilman Peterson.
Two questions. Could you tell us again which areas it's currently not allowed in, but conditionally allowed
conditionally
in?
Allowed in the neighborhood commercial, the office professional, and the commercial service, which would be the east end of Grand Avenue.
Okay.
Well, here's a zoning map. The bright red would be the commercial service area.
And are there any indications or any guidelines as to what amenities are needed by the folks who would be making
a transit stop?
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Okay. There's no other questions. I did have a question, but I think he had addressed it with respect to the performance standard. So this is a business item, and I know that we just opened up one to the public, so I'm going to open this up as well. Is there any member of the public that would like to address this item before the council? Seeing none, I'm going to close it, bring it back to the council. And we're just being asked to give some direction to initiate a code amendment to comply with SB 2 and provide direction regarding which zoning district should be considered for emergency shelters. So I think what will help move us along is staff looks like they were pointing out we adopted a housing element that identified three potential areas that emergency shelters could be allowed by right. That was light manufacturing, R3, light manufacturing, and the coastal industrial. And I guess staff is suggesting that if we continue to be consistent with that, then we would have to allow that in the appropriate zoning districts unless we choose to increase that or reduce those districts. So let's talk about, are we, is that
Mayor,
something?
And if I may, I'm sorry for interrupting, but just so our staff's recommendation is clear and maybe the direction is, or at least the where staff is coming from is clear. There is no requirement that all three of those zones be considered. Housing element, as submitted and certified, was a product of negotiation between the state and the city, and we suggested these areas for potential or for future consideration. So I would not want the council to move forward understanding that we are required by right to permit these in all three of these zones. I think staff would actually recommend that we focus on a zone to select, or an overlay to select.
Okay, hold on, because that's where we're going. I'm trying to find out from the council majority, do we think that the three that were laid out is appropriate, or do we want to scale that back to one, or is there variation? So, Councilmember Bright and then Mayor Pro Tem.
I think that we...
eliminate the R3. I think we also ought to eliminate the light manufacturing. I don't see any need for having anything more than just the C1 coastal industrial area. That would be one zoned area where they can put that type of facility without having to go through getting a use permit or any other jump through any other hoops. So if that's all we need is just one zoned area, they can put it someplace else if they have good reason for it and can convince the city that it would do well in a different location. I don't care whether it's R3 or R1 or whatever. Mm-hmm. That they can come to the city council for and ask for, go to the planning commission and bring it to the city council. But as far as our meeting the state's mandate, I think we ought to just designate the coastal industrial area and let it go at that.
Okay. Any thoughts on Councilmember Myers?
I would go for first an overlay standard. Whatever zones we pick certain parts within the zone to say this is where it's appropriate, get it close to transportation, get it close to shopping, get it close to whatever people and homeless people need to order to survive. And we should be concerned more about the survival of the homeless people than about what some of the neighbors may think, as far as I'm concerned. But if we put it in the coastal zone, we don't have the neighborhood issue much. If we put it in the light manufacturing, we don't have the neighborhood issue much. So I would actually like to have two zones, one in the light manufacturing and one in the coastal, so that's overlay, so we could accommodate the needs of the homeless. If we're going to do it, let's do it properly and do it so that these people get served and we don't just address the rest of the world that's just concerned about the impact on their property values.
So are you talking overlay?
Overlay, yes.
Is that in a sense that staff, when you talk overlay, are you saying there's a certain base zone and then you may not take that entire area that's zoned LM and say they can be there, but you take a portion of it and put an overlay?
Correct. The overlay would be a subset of the entire zone. So, again, in coastal industrial, you could just have the overlay on the area along South 4th in here, and you could not have the overlay in that northern area.
Yes, correct. That's what I'm thinking, actually.
Okay. Councilmember Pete?
There is access to public transport, then I might be willing to vote for that. I'm not sure on South 4th, that far down on South 4th, south of Farrell. I guess on Farrell there's public transport. As far as the coastal industrial area, that runs along Highway 1 and down South 4th. so possibly that there would be public transport there. So I might support overlays if they were, if they also would provide the amenities that would be necessary for the folks who live there or would make use of them.
Okay, so there's a lot of comments that have been made, and tonight it's really just to initiate this process. And obviously you can give some direction, but we'll have an opportunity to obviously modify that before any final decisions are made. So hopefully, staff, you're taking notes. Did you have a comment?
Yeah. We could notice, depending on what the council direction was, we're going to have to notice everybody that lives within this zone and everybody that lives within 300 feet. So, for instance, if we wanted to notice all three of those, that would be a lot of noticing. We're also trying to narrow this down. Granted, you know, once these property owners get notification that you're considering that, if you then switch to something that's not been noticed, we'd have to go about and re-notice. So we want to keep the noticing broad enough where the council does have some flexibility to make a final decision that might not include all of those being considered.
Okay. So what I'm hearing, and I know the Mayor Pro Tem talked about just one zone, but it looks like there's not quite an agreement on whether that should be one zone. I think the only zone that was ruled out and seemed like there's broad consensus on is R3.
Yes.
So we could consider it in LM and the CI, but not take final action.
Right.
Correct.
Right. Correct.
And then if we do consider LM and CI, I think we would want to take a look at an overlay, because when I look at the LM zone on this map, even though, no, I'm not going to say that, I'm not creating records.
Exactly.
So
I agree wholeheartedly.
Okay. So I think that would be a good direction for us to go, is to keep those two open at least for exploration, and then the use of the overlay. And then if we choose, after seeing more information, to say, nope, it's just this one zone and it's just this one area, I think we're okay. Everyone okay with maybe approaching it that way?
Sure.
But I've given everyone else the floor, so I do want to get one thing off my chest. I understand the issue of the performance standards, and I understand staff came back, and because the first bullet, I think there's five bullets, the last four are okay. The first bullet gives me a lot of heartburn when you say require that the shelter operator have neighborhood meetings and prepare an agreement, and you said a management plan between the neighborhood and the operator. I just don't know how you can do that legally, and I don't even know how that's enforceable. So I would think that the better way would be is if someone is coming into a neighborhood and we are considering it, that they submit that management plan for approval to the city.
Yes.
Because the enforcement will ultimately fall on this agency, and I would hate to be a landowner or a provider and have to get a neighborhood's permission on items, because all it takes is one or two who are not my backyard type people. So I think that is a very onerous. So I would hope that there's a consensus to maybe figure out a better way to bring something like that forward. I think meeting with the neighborhood's good, but submitting a management plan to us so that we have an expectation, so that should they not comply with that, then code enforcement would be easier to do.
John, could I forcibly agree with you on that point?
Yes, you can.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, Mr.
Councilmember. And I agree, too. I mean, we need to know what we're going to have to enforce.
Absolutely.
And if it's enforceable.
Okay.
Mayor, so, council member, also for so staff is clear on noticing, is it then the desire of the council to consider an ordinance that would allow these as a matter of right in the LM zone or portions of it?
No,
and the southern part of the coastal industrial, in other words, that is below.
Yes.
I believe, is it the Highland Extension?
Farrell.
Yes, that is correct.
Eliminating the areas around Grand.
And let me even complicate this a little further for the staff, because I've been trying to be very careful about the fact that we adopted the land use element, and you've talked about that. The land use map and the zoning map don't quite.
Really is a holding designation that would require a specific plan for the when the property is developed.
Right.
So it could also be considered as well with some type of language that would exempt that type of project from a going forward with a specific plan. They could go ahead independently.
Okay. All the more reason why we need to move forward with updating the zoning map and looking at updating the use table. And I'm not going to, I don't want to get too far down that road, but I think staff gets the
yes.
gets my drift.
Mr. Mayor, the other thing, can I suggest, and I think I understand in the interim step, I mean, what I understand the council would like is for us to return focusing on the, at this point, on the LMI and the coastal industrial and look at specific overlay areas potentially within them. I would suggest you'd probably want us to bring that back to you before we do any noticing of any ordinance or of any type.
Well, if we could do that, city attorney, I mean, is that, because if you bring it back to us, it's going to be in a public hearing setting.
Well,
anyway.
You can certainly bring it back for further discussion in a workshop, and from which will be a genesis for then moving forward in an ordinance, which would be subject to public
hearing. So are the noticing for a workshop different from an actual hearing item or
yes, they are.
Consider an action?
Yeah,
yes.
I mean, and they are different.
Okay.
And because there is no public hearing noticing okay. requirements.
Great. Okay, great. Good. I just wanted to clarify that. Okay. Staff, you feel like you have, I think, well, this is one where you're asking us to initiate a code amendment, and I need to get a motion on this. And there was direction given, but no formal motion on this item, or you have another way we can get
yeah,
to
Mayor, I think in view of how this discussion moved forward and in view of the fact that we are going to be returning to you not with a code amendment but rather with a further discussion and maybe a little bit more focused approach, my recommendation would be that the motion simply directs staff to return for a workshop on this rather than actually initiate a code
okay.
amendment.
Someone prepared to make that motion?
I'll make that motion.
Okay.
I'll second the motion.
There's a motion. There's a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? None. Motion carries. Okay. We have no pooled consent items this evening.
Decided to construct a traditional landfill facility in Cat Canyon.
Hmm.
They were considering a plasma gasification or waste-to-energy facility. I'm not quite sure why they went the traditional landfill mode, but that's what they decided to do, which I think is really quite a shame, being that what I know about the syngas, which is what happens with the plasma gasification system, you could put like in a top of a pin, but it seems to be a very forward-thinking way of disposing of household waste and getting it out of the landfills while at the same time generating enough energy to not only run the plant itself but also other surrounding homes or businesses. So that was kind of the most significant information that I gleaned from that meeting.
Great.
Thank you.
Councilmember Myers.
My RAC meets tomorrow in the zone, and integrated waste hasn't met since the last council meeting, so I'm off the hook tonight.
Nice. Councilmember Peterson.
Yes, I had a couple of meetings. I had the privilege of being Councilmember Bright's alternative at the most recent EVC Economic Vitality Corporation meeting, where they had an expert on airports nationwide, and they gave our little airport in San Luis Obispo a glowing report. We're actually performing, I think they said, the best in the nation. The Economic Vitality Corporation has, working with local businesses and the airport, have really done well to increase business there. Business has significantly increased in the last couple of years. So that was very positive news. And then there was also a report from, and I'll just include these, from the Visitor Convention Bureau, where I sit as the committee
the council's committee representative about Savor the Central Coast and the economic benefit. And I think the economic benefit for the county as a whole for that four-day event was about $1.7 million. So it was very well received and very positive. And that's just the initial. There probably will be more to come. But they had a report from a business expert at Cal Poly who said,
to be the lead organization in coming up with the number one, we got to find the property or the facility to put it in. They will dole out the money step by step. They've got some other criteria that must be met, but they did appreciate the work that's been done, the presentation that was made. They're encouraging a South County facility that will become a reality.
That's great.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't really have anything to report tonight. SLOCOG, there is a board meeting coming up in December. There will be, I believe, the action will be on the regional transportation plan as well as a preliminary sustainable communities plan. And so I'll give you a more complete report at our next council meeting because it will be before that meeting. Let's move to our city council member items. We have none at this time. Council communications. Anyone have anything they want to communicate tonight?
I'd like to make one communication to PG&E and to its representatives here for being such good citizens and bringing this program forward that we heard about tonight. I've watched the PG&E over the years push not using so much energy, and I've always thought that was to their disadvantage, but for somehow they've done it anyhow, and they're still doing it. And if you check what happened here tonight, the city's not doing much other than say, yes, go to it, PG&E, because they're paying all the money, putting up all the effort and doing everything except turning the key to get in on the door. So we turned the key tonight, and hooray, PG&E, go for it.
Well, there you go. Councilmember Peterson.
I had circulated in the Friday letter to the council members an email from the organizer of the Central Coast Railroad Festival, and I think some of us have had opportunity to chat with him, and it came. We got rather late notice to be able to participate in any way other than quite a nice financial contribution. This year, I'd really like to see us look at how we might participate more substantially next year, because I think that it ties in very nicely with us continuing to push our train. I think that's really relevant to where we go economically in the next few years. So I just wondered if the council would be interested in perhaps hearing from them or asking staff to take a look at whether or not we should be involved in how we can.
Anyway, you actually have a rail depot. So I think we need to remedy that situation next year. Please let him know that.
I'll pass that on.
My only communication tonight, well, I have two. I think Jeff Lee talked about the Carve Pumpkin event Friday night. It was a great turnout. And I'd like to confiscate all photos of me and Mrs. Scholes in our costumes.
Never happened.
But it was a great turnout, and I know that it was well attended by members of the community. And I know that Kathy and her staff continue to do a great job on that event. So kudos to them. The last thing I wanted to say was I just wanted to thank everyone from the bottom of my heart for the prayers and the condolences for the passing of my father. My mother was very touched and moved by all of the well wishes and very touched by the moment of silence that you all offered. And so in these tough times, our family is strengthened to know that we have friends who truly care about us. And so I wanted to say thank you to everyone for your well wishes. And I'm going to stop because I'm still tough. Anyway, okay. City Manager, you got any reports or comments tonight?
Just very quickly, I just wanted to give the council a heads up. There's a number of significant issues the council, our staff, will want to be bringing to the council's attention over the next couple of months. And probably the next meeting, I'll provide you with a suggested schedule. Some of those will probably be joint meetings with the Planning Commission. And to let you know what's Ahead of you is the Grand Avenue, West Grand Avenue Master Plan. That's going to be a big piece. The Lodge and Conference Center, the EIR, is going to be finished or out for public comment the middle of January, and so we'll be bringing that to the Council Planning Commission, just going over the basically the schematics and not to solicit comments, but to outline what the process and procedure will be. Two other major items that the council has indicated an interest in, the streets and water. So those are all some of the major issues we'll be dealing with over the next couple of months, and probably be asking for a couple extra meetings along the way.
And if I can just add on for the streets, we're talking about